This is the Untitled Car Show, and that is Ryan. He's my co-host.
Yo. Can we do the quality better yet? Is that something we can do yet, or are we still going to do it like crappy?
Tell me what you mean by quality like that.
I mean, are we going to pretend we know what we're doing and not just like shoot from the hip, or like, are we just going to keep doing that? Because I could go either way, but I figure if we changed it up for once and made it sound semi-professional, we'd have more views. Maybe. I don't know.
You would think that. I don't know. So what? Well, do you want to try a professional one? Why don't you lead us in then?
I mean, you're the one that has all the topics listed in front of you. I'm just along for the ride today. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I've been out working on my vehicles all day today, and I am running on caffeine and a whole bunch of just like, I realized around like 8 o'clock at night that the only thing I ate all day today was a bowl of cereal at like 8 in the morning. So that was not helpful. So, but I did have like 4 cups of coffee in that time and 2 energy drinks. So I am just doing well. So I don't know if my scattered brains can be the best with leading into the professional stuff, but it will be good at doing topics and jumping from point to point to point, I think.
I think if we can get there, if we can just get from topic to topic smoothly, then I think the rest of it will just fall into place and we won't have any problems.
Like a micro mobility scooter, we run on Segways. So
how long have you been waiting on that one?
I did. Listen, this is professional. That was a professional joke. Okay. So let's start with doing some stuff that we need to catch up everyone on, which A1, number one, we need to talk about our own personal cars. And this is where I think I should take the lead here and go, because this is my show in theory. So I have 4 working cars right now. So I have
fantastic. Okay.
Yes. So I have my Fiesta ST's working, although that's developed a new issue, and I figured I would lead off the show because you love to shit on Ford. So yes, it is now developed an issue where the automatic climate control.
Time out. Are you telling me that your Ford, that's an ST model, it's like one of the most reliable cars ever, and they're great, and everybody should buy one because they're super cheap.
Yes,
has an electrical issue.
I don't know exactly what the issue is, but it's the automatic temperature control doesn't work how it's supposed to, and I don't know if that's there's shit on the sensor or if there's something going on inside the system electronically. But it only really seems to work. It doesn't work on auto anymore. Like I used to be able to go in and just go like, you know what, I would like it to be 72 degrees and it would have a nice airflow over me and it would be awesome. And over the last week, it's like, I would like it to be 72 degrees. And it's turned into, I don't know what those mean anymore. So I'm just going to blast heat at you until you turn me off. And that's been really freaking annoying because I like a nice little cool breeze on my body. So that was fun. So that's developed a new issue, but I did get new floor mats for it, and I am delighted by them because they're the all-weather floor mats, and they say Fiesta ST on them, and it makes me happy.
You bought the factory floor mats.
I got them off of the eBay. They're the rubber ones, and it's awesome. So, yes, that is a long way of saying yes. I bought the factory floor mats.
So I'm not a big fan of factory floor mats in general, especially when you get the all-weather ones because they're too floppy. So you go to pull the floor mat out of the car.
Yeah,
because you're going to clean it out or whatever, and it flops, and then all the stuff falls on the thing. If you get a climate, what's the word I'm looking for? A climate transistor.
I know where you're going with this.
A climate transistor floor liner, as opposed to the factory one. They're a harder plastic. They're deep dish. They're like deep boys that it catches more stuff. They're $200 for the set. Yeah. I have purchased that on every car I've owned so far, and that's $200 that I spend, and I don't look back. It's like, yep, I'm going to do it. That's how we do it here. No question.
I get that, and I really should buy them because they are located next to the town in which I grew up in.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
They are very close to home, but it's most of my cars I've ever owned, they were never an option, which was always weird to me. So, like, when I bought the Challengers were too new. I could never get them for the Saturns that I owned.
Well, that's not a surprise.
Right. The Volvos, it was hard to find them. Like, I would like a WeatherTech floor or a something transistor floor liner for my Volvo C30. We don't know what that is. So, Like, there's just not enough of them.
For a Focus not fit, since it's basically a Focus?
No, because the Focus bit of the Volvo C30 is the, like, front subframe and, like, a bit of the rear suspension and everything else. Like, you can see, like, I parked it next to the same generation Focus. And the Focus is, for those listening, you're going to have to use your imagination. But the Focus is... body frame is like that thick, like where the doors close, and on the Volvo C30 it's like that, so it is like twice as big, like in terms of like overall like frame thickness,
like 2 to 3 inches to 6 inches for people mm-hmm. that are on them. Okay,
right. So, and it makes it so that, and it's 2-door to 4-door and all that stuff, but the Fiesta is probably the first car in which I could get them for it. But I also have, I don't know how you are about this, but I have, when I drive my car, I rest my foot on the ground and it just digs straight through floor mats. And I just go through floor mats probably like once every like 3 or 4 years. Cause like literally there was a hole like in my floor mats from my foot.
That's how it happens though. That's why you get the climate transistor floor mats.
But is
it, because they're plastic. They're not rubber. Cause even the rubber ones, I was at work today, an Acura MDX. Mm-hmm. Had all of their floor mats, and that was worn through. That was the mm-hmm. first time I'd seen that. But apparently it happens to those too, if you get the factory ones for Acura anyway. So, but whereas the ones to which we are referring are like genuinely, they're plastic. So I don't think they would wear through. But they're also, what I did notice though, occasionally if I like to go on a long drive, I'll take my shoes off because my shoes are rather uncomfortable because I have size 15 foot.
Yes.
It means mm-hmm. you can't just pick comfortable shoes, you just have to pick what's there,
right?
When you rest your foot on the mat, the plastic does leave an imprint on your foot and it's quite uncomfortable.
Yeah, that is less than ideal. I don't imagine the rubber ones would be much better though, because they as floppy as they are, they seem like they would do the same thing. Even my fabric ones, when I used to do super long road trips all the time, those would leave like a nice little imprint in my foot. But I also think I just have, the best way I describe it is I have dumb feet. Like, my feet have never been trained to do anything besides just drive a car. Like, I never played, I played football, but I never played football, like, i.e. soccer, or like anything where I really needed my feet to like do anything. Like, my wife was a former ballerina, and it's one of those things where it's like, teaching her to drive a manual, she got in and figured it out right away. Whereas my feet are like, I don't understand, like, pressures and all that stuff, and it took me a while to figure out how to drive a manual car. So I just led, my feet are lead weights basically. I don't know how better to describe it than that. But I love my floor mats, and a pox on you for suggesting that they say Fiesta. I can't get the little Fiesta ST in the other brand. It just says their name. Why would I want
you a sticker?
It's not the same. It's in the molding, and it's awesome. So,
yes, your Fiesta ST with electrical issues is awesome. Yes, absolutely.
Only in the HVAC system. And I do have to say, I do think there's a curse on this program, because every single time I bring up a vehicle and I'm like, it's running well or it's doing whatever, the next week something bad happens to it. So I think that's why my Volvo Volvo V70R blew up, is because I was so hyped to get it, and then that motherfucker blew up almost immediately. So there's that. My Fiero is back up. It's on the road. I took it out for a spin today. I think I have all the issues, like, more or less. If I don't know, if it's not fixed, I think I know the cause of it. So I'm very excited about that. And for those of you who've listened to this on the podcast, there's YouTube stuff, and it should be out soon, or maybe before this, of me actually driving that thing around a little bit. So that'll be exciting. And then today I decided, while I'm covered, if you've noticed my hands, I am covered in a bunch of bed liner. Like, you can see. Yeah. And I managed to bedline the entire rear of the Ranger, which was absolutely delightful.
The whole thing, or just the bed?
From the cab backwards is, or behind the cab, everything is just bedliner now, which is awesome.
That has to be minus EV for any rust issues you're about to have, because now the water's just going to stay on the metal, as opposed to not being on the metal.
Right. Well, surprisingly, the old owner of the car let the literally a $30 bottle of windshield sealer would have saved me all the rust issues I have on the inside in the cab. He did have a plastic bed liner, like one of the drop-in bed liners, which, yeah, it wasn't great, which is why I took it off, but it actually did its job really well. All the paint had been like sanded off, like for years of years of like just debris getting up underneath there and just like rubbing back and forth. Like, you can't see my hands, but rubbing back and forth. But the bed liner, like there's no, well, two spots had rust, got rid of them, treated them, and like bedlined the thing, and I'm happy as can be with that. So that's awesome.
That's
you know, I'm very excited about that. So I decided that bedliner is the herpes of the car world in terms of paint, because I don't know how, but it has followed me everywhere I have gone today. Like, it's one of the first things I did today. And like I said, like, my elbow is based, this is after like the Goju and all that stuff. So that was fun. But it did bring me to a point when I was working. So I worked on the Ranger first, Ranger working, popped over to the Fiero, and I had something happen to me there that was absolutely asinine. And it's one of the things I want to ask you about, which is, so I do this sort of stuff all the time. And I think this is a common thing in the automotive world, which is I get something and I go, okay, I'm going to sit down for half a second. I'm going to think about how I'm going to tackle this situation. And in this case, it was, so the Fiero, obviously motor in the back, coolant gets put into the front.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Right. So
because I've read the service manual for this process on the MR2 and it sucks.
Right. It does suck. So
continue.
So everyone on the Fiero forums has an idea of like, okay, well, here's the service thing and here's how you're supposed to fill it, but not everyone has this. Blah blah. I literally went out and bought a vacuum fill apparatus just so I could do it the proper way. But the car had a small leak. So where the radiator coolant hose hits up front, I had to tighten it down because it had developed a very small leak over. So it had leaked out maybe like half of a liter, like, so maybe even less, like 250 milliliters using my water bottle as scale. So I had to put more in because the pipe had lost its structural rigidity and you could feel air in there. So I'm like, okay, how am I going to do this? Well, I got my little coolant bucket thing and it's got all the little attachments and I can go out that way. So how I normally do this is I just take the whole hood off and I put it on the side,
right,
and then I put the thing on top and I fill it in. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to do it that way because that's such a pain in the ass and getting it aligned and everything. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the hood hinge support out so I can pop the hood open a little bit further than normal. I put a little bit of a brace in there and like wedge it so it holds in place. I put the bucket, I get it all in there and it's working great. I'm like, okay, great. Go in, start the car, watch the little air bubbles come out. I squeeze the hose in the back so that all the air comes out. And as that happens, just a little bit of motion causes the hood to bump back, which bumps the bucket, which pours into the front truck and then spills all over the inside. I'm like, oh my God. So I'm like, it's one of those things where it's like, it wasn't a stupid idea.
But better ones could have been conceived.
Right. Like, if I would have just taken, like, you know, I did everything in theory I was supposed to. I planned it out. I went, okay, here's what I need to do, da 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 da. But then it didn't quite work out that way. And it's one of those things where it's, again, I don't feel like I was stupid, but at the end of the day, I was dumb. And right. I don't know if you have anything like that. So I had to clean up. So that was fun. So that was why a little bit late starting today, because that was literally the thing when that happened. We were about to record and I went like, Ryan, like, I'm going to be a little bit late.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Everybody's a little late sometime. You know, sometimes we're late bloomers.
This is true. No, that have you been reading all my reports from middle school?
I guess so.
But do you have anything like that where you're like, man, this is probably not stupid, but it is definitely a little dumb the way I'm going around with that.
Yeah, so the last time you and I spoke, and Dave and Ian were here as well.
Right.
we were kind of speaking about what type of vehicle I should get to encounter the Minnesota winters that I'm going to deal with now.
I like where this is going.
So I really had my mind set on, like, I think I want an M235i with the all-wheel drive. It's going to give me everything I want. I get the nice motor, the turbos, all-wheel drive. On the M235i, if you get the all-wheel drive one, it has a regular torque converter automatic.
Huh.
Like, you can't go wrong. Can't go wrong with that. That's what's in the race car as well. So they have the race car version. That one also uses torque converter automatic. It's the same one that's in the X5.
Okay.
It's the current one. So very beefy transmission, very solid cars. And I see, and part of, honestly, why I think of that car is part of doing commentary for WRL, World Racing League, and as well as American Endurance Racing, et cetera, that these M235IRs, which are just the race car version, which is basically my perfect idea of what a race car should be, which is we pulled this off the production line, we put a cage in it, put some bigger wheels on, and sent it.
Right.
It's fantastic. So it's got a little bit beefier fenders on there, but otherwise pretty normal car. And those bang around tracks and don't have issues, and they don't go through tires very fast, and they're really, really reliable. So I thought, I'll buy myself one of these. I'll get the reliable BMW. And I keep looking, and I keep looking, and they're all either 120K and like under 20 grand.
Yeah.
Or they're all 35,000 miles and they're 30 grand. Yeah. It's kind of a lot of money, you know, current juncture. I'm still kind of healing from the move and the being unemployed for several months type of deal. We're still trying to climb that mountain, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And not too bad though. Thank you. 0% cards. Appreciate that. Just got to pay them in time, you know, the clock's ticking. So we got to get there. So it wasn't really prudent, I think, to saddle myself with a $500 car payment.
Right.
You know, when I'm staring down the barrel of that, as much as I really want the car. So I was a little annoyed. My dealership usually has a wide selection of like used Lexus RXs. Like that's the majority of what we sell are Lexus RXs.
Okay.
Nice I look cars. At those. Yeah. Nice cars. Comfortable, quiet. Not very good gas mileage, but good car.
Yeah.
I just need something with all-wheel drive that's comfortable, you know, that I can commute in or that my wife can take my daughter to school in. And
right.
I'm looking around and we get this Volkswagen Touareg again. It's like a 2007. It's like very early one with the V8, not the V6 and not the cool. If it was the V12 diesel, I probably would have done it. Just for the sake of like, I've always wanted to have one of those. Like that'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
So I drove that into the shop and because we get cars from the other dealerships and I have to drive them into the shop and I get it into the shop and I get underneath it. I'm like, oh, yeah, it doesn't look too bad. I open the hood and it looks fine. And I'm like, huh, I could get behind this. Everything I drove it around the block, everything worked really good. I'm like, okay, we'll see. We'll see. I guarantee we own this for nothing. So I could probably buy it pretty cheap. And they pull the single piece of plastic. There's like a plastic skid plate type deal, presumably for aerodynamics. They pull that one piece off to change the oil, and it is covered in oil and dirt. Like the entire panel, it's probably 2 by 2.5 feet by a foot wide plastic panel they pull from underneath the sump, covered in oil. Oof. You look at it, the oil return lines for the cooler are like way leaking. The oil pan's leaking, the whole, I'm like, I don't think that's going to be the one.
Right.
And so I'm tossing back and forth in my head, like, yeah, but if I could buy this for $1,500, would it matter? You know, like if I'm going to spend a little bit of money on this and have a nice Touareg, which is, you know, basically a Porsche Cayenne, right? Right.
Right.
You
know? Yeah. Kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah. You know, same thing. Same yeah.
Factory,
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I'm tossing that around. My boss walks up to me and he says, hey, you know, we just took that X5 in. And I said, what X5? And so I go out back and look, and let me just fire up the screen sharing. A gentleman who had recently purchased a allocation of a BMW X7, which is the expensive one, traded one of these in. So this one right over here, this 2002 BMW X5. This is the same wheels I have. Mine does not have the sprayers for the headlights. But otherwise, this is exactly the same vehicle I have. And my interior is tan. This one's black, it looks like.
Which tan is better?
Yes, I would agree with that for sure. Mm-hmm. So on the face of it, 180,000 mile BMW X5, not a good idea.
No, not.
So he says, we just took this X5 in. I go out there. It's actually in really nice shape. Body is immaculate. There's like one scrape down the side that I'm pretty sure even I could buff out if I had to.
Yeah.
I take it for a drive. Everything's super tight. The interior is like clean. It had been traded in and it was already clean. It's like the guy had taken care of it. There's no seat tears. There's no, you get in and everything kind of worked. I was like, well, what's the deal with this? I pull the Carfax out. 2002 vehicle with 180,000 miles. How many service records do you think were on that bad boy?
It's either
BMW with five owners.
Ooh, it's either a absolute ton, so like 185, or it's like three.
So there were 76 service records on this bad boy, which is still a lot. That's a 15-page Carfax.
Right, that
was on there.
To give an idea of it, when I bought the V70R, which was an 05, I think that it was a grand. It had two owners prior to me, 05 to like 2011, 11 to like 17 is when I think I bought it, and I bought it in 17. And I think there was 20 service records in it in that whole time.
Right.
So, and that was the first guy brought it to Volvo for its maintenance consistently for the first 3 years and then just stopped. And that's literally where the service history stopped.
Gotcha. Which is to say that it was never serviced.
Right.
It just wasn't serviced at a shop that reported. And then you don't know if it was done at the right intervals, et cetera.
Right.
I tell people at work all the time, sir, if this really wasn't serviced for 65,000 miles, it would not currently be here.
But the difference is, you know, that at least if it's done, even if it's done by like Jiffy Lube, you know, that is a professional taking care of it, which is great. So, which means someone likes the car.
Yes, exactly. So this 76 service record BMW, I bought it for $3,000.
Which would be what the dealership normally gives it away to auction for.
Yeah. We were in it for a little bit less than that. It's because like I have to have us make a little bit of money on this. Right. So I didn't murder myself, but you know, it wasn't like a zero cost thing either.
Right.
And then I also purchased a $1,500 warranty to go with that. So I spent half the value in the vehicle hedging my bet that something was going to break. But it is fully refundable, and it's a 4-year, get this, 4-year, 75,000 mile warranty.
Okay. That's decent. That's so really good for a BMW.
It'll cover it out to 200 and whatever thousand miles.
Yeah.
For, you know, for $1,500, like if it needs literally one thing on that, it's going to be paid for.
For a BMW that's old enough to vote. Like, that's crazy. Like.
Exactly. Exactly. Now that was at cost. I did get the warranty on that at cost.
Yeah.
So.
Well, at least you'll be there when the car breaks, you know, like.
Right. So it's not fast. This is the 3-liter. So it's the same motor that's in the 3 Series and the 5 Series from kind of that time period, that 01 to 06 kind of era. So it would be the big motor for the 3 Series, but the small motor on the 5 Series type of deal. Mm-hmm. So it's not fast. It's pretty slow. It is probably the slowest vehicle I currently own. Yeah. But it pulls really nice and it feels really good. But then this morning it was a little bit cold out. And I, one, couldn't open the door because I foolishly drove through a car wash the night prior. And then this morning I get down there and I can't get the key in the door. And like, I can finally get it in and then it won't turn. I'm like, damn it. Okay. And so I kind of work it back and forth slowly a little bit, keep it going. Ha, it unlocks. Cool. Pull on the door handle. Nothing. I'm like, what the fuck? God damn it. So I had to stand there and like, jimmy all the doors, and I eventually got one door to open, and then it wouldn't shut because the tumbler was, or the lock or the striker thing in there was still frozen, so it would just bounce off the side of the car every time you would shut it because it wouldn't latch.
Oh my god,
it was a good time. I really enjoyed it. Definitely learned my lesson on that one because I didn't want the salt to be on it. Like, it snowed here like 8 inches on Tuesday.
Well, it's the Midwest, so yes,
apparently this happens. Is the earliest they've ever got that much snow. So people are like freaking out about it. So it was all covered in salt. So I wanted to wash it after, because it had just stopped. The roads are dry again. So I want to wash it because it looks black. So that means when the salt's down, it looks white.
Right. Yeah.
So I wanted to wash it. And I was like, well, if I'm going to drive it tomorrow, I want to drive to work and have it be clean.
Well,
so that's on me. But this morning, because it was cold, not only could I not open the door, also when I started it and drove down the road, the 2-3 shift gave me a little bit of a kind of a jerk there. So I'm relishing the idea of this warranty company. I can take it to any ASE certified shop. So I'm really looking forward to rolling this into the BMW dealership and having them put a $10,000 transmission in my piece of shit BMW. Yeah. But it's a fantastic car. It's built really nice.
Yeah.
The fit and finish on everything is really good. I drive BMWs all the time at work because we'll get them in on trade or whatever. They're always 08, 2010, 2012, here or there. Mm-hmm. And they don't have the same feel. They always feel kind of neglected or like stuff's about to fall apart or they have like an electrical issue or they have something going on. You're like, eh, I don't know. This one's devoid mostly of electronic stuff. And they make that joke in Top Gear when they go to South America or whatever, and he has the 5 Series wagon. Mm-hmm. This is basically a lifted 5 Series wagon. It's what an X5 is.
Right.
And they make the joke that it's like, oh, I thought it was the last non-electrical BMW, but you have a throttle position sensor problem because it still has electronics. And, like, that's true, but way less electronics in this than a lot of the other ones. And so I'm really happy with it, and now I spend most of my day at work looking at Bring a Trailer and Cars and Bids, looking for early 2000s BMWs for sale, because I'm totally in now. I'm 100% all in on, like, this is a great car.
Yeah. My understanding is the reason in particular the X5 is such a good vehicle from that era is all the BMW engineers basically get thrown at, like, a particular problem. So, like, for a while, like, I know the last problem they were thrown at was, like, okay, we need to make a hybrid electric car. So all you engineers, you're just going to go make that. And then they come up with the i8. And then they go off to do other things. And then they leave some engineers to go, okay, you all figure out how to put that inside of a small car. And that's how you get the i3. So, like, the X5, my understanding is they took all the engineers who were working on whatever before and they went, okay, we need an SUV. So all the engineers go, and they put all the engineers on the X5 and they built a very good car for the first generation. And then the X6 and everything that came after that was all like, okay, we need to make this, but coupe somehow.
Right.
And we need to make this, but bigger. Like, so figure that out.
So something I had forgotten, mostly because I wasn't alive at the time. but I read about, because I hadn't read it before, that the X5 was designed and conceived in the mid-90s, so like right around 95, 96, they started working on it. BMW owned Land Rover at that time.
Huh.
So that's why the X5 has the same type of split tailgate situation that a Land Rover has, like a Range Rover. It's the same electronic system as far as the transmission control, as well as it has the downhill descent control thing.
Yeah,
is straight off of a Range Rover, supposedly. There's a lot of portions of it, I guess, that they used a lot of the geometry, etc., from the Range Rover to kind of get themselves halfway there, and then everything else they took out of the 5 Series parts bin.
Well, that makes sense.
Half 5 Series with bits of Range Rover sprinkled here and there, and you really do get that feeling being inside of it. My buddy has a 2012 Cayenne. Mm-hmm. I drove that today after driving my car to work. I drove that somewhere to go get something, and you sit in the Cayenne and it feels like a big car.
Yeah.
And it drives kind of big. Like, it doesn't drive like a Panamera, but when you're sitting in it and you're kind of your view out of the car, it feels like a Panamera, your seating position, okay, how low the roof is, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, got it. If you get into an X5, it does not feel or look like you're in a 5 Series.
Yeah.
The windows are really tall. The roof line is really high. You have all that stuff. So you do actually feel like you're up and above, you know, a large percentage of me is shown above the door, if that makes sense. Not about it being actually high, but about the greenhouse being pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you kind of that expansive feel to it, so you're not all claustrophobic and locked in, which I really, really like. But then when you look down, when you avert your gaze slightly down, it looks like a 5 Series. So it's kind of I prefer that design ethos, if you will, as compared to what Porsche did with the Cayenne, which is like, let's make it a Porsche, but an SUV one. Whereas this one, I believe BMW genuinely wanted to make an SUV, but didn't want to spend the money. Whereas Porsche is more than willing to spend the money to make a good SUV, but they want it to be a car, if that makes sense.
Right. It's kind of, I think what BMW was trying to do was go like, okay, we're going to build SUV, and then the customer is going to take us where we need to go. Whereas, you know, Porsche by that point, they already knew, you know, Porsche knows, like, they don't make their money on the 911. You know, they make some money on the Boxsters and the other one or whatever. The 918 now, whatever they're called. And then
718.
But the moneymaker for them is the Cayenne, and it's like, and the Panamera, I think, is their next.
The Macan is the big one now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The small one. Yeah.
So they kind of know, like, there's been enough market research now when they're part of a big conglomerate where they know what's going on. But SUVs, I mean, people forget, like, how new of a thing they were in, like, the early 2000s. Those things exploded. And, like, no one knew what anyone wanted because it was, like, what a lot of, I think, manufacturers got confused about is they were going, like, well, if people want X, Y, and Z, they want a minivan. But that's not why they want an SUV. So why do they want an SUV? Not realizing it's literally all appearance. Like, as long as it doesn't look like a minivan, it's fine. Like, that's 90% of it. Like, the things that make it slightly impractical are the only things people care about.
I think BMW really hit the right chord with picking the right style of SUVs. Like, in the mid to early 90s, you only had two options if you want something like that. You had the ML,
right,
Mercedes, which, mm-hmm, from that era, you still see those driving around. And you had the RX 300 or the RX 330. Mm-hmm. Those were really the only luxury SUVs. I mean, you could get you were starting to see the Yukons and stuff. That's a different class of vehicle. Right. And I would say that both the RX and the ML are a little bit too close to the car side. And then Porsche made the Cayenne. Again, it feels very car.
Yeah.
On the inside of a Cayenne. And then the flip side was you could go buy a Tahoe, or you could go buy a Range Rover, or you could go buy a G-Wagon or whatever. I think BMW really hit the right middle ground of it's on a 5 Series chassis, but it still sits up pretty high. You still got a lot of space in there. It does drive pretty well. They talk about in the literature that it's a rear biased. It's like 68% to the rear all-wheel drive, mm-hmm, because they wanted it to feel like a 5 Series on the road.
Hmm.
So they wanted to keep it as rear drive as they could get away with and still be able to have the advantages of the all-wheel drive in the snow. So I think they really picked the right kind of middle ground, and they were rewarded with that because these were pretty popular for a time.
Yeah.
And even today, they're still pretty popular. You know, you've got your X6 going down the coupe-sized one. But you see a lot of these BMW SUVs on the road still, you know, especially, mm-hmm, compared to, like, you don't see GLs,
mm-mm,
or MLs, or you don't see very many Acura MDXs. I don't see them anyway. You still see tons of Lexus RXs, but, you know, that's Lexus going in a different direction.
Yeah.
Right.
Toyota, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very true. And I never really had a problem with the X5. I think the X6 is like the beginning of the end of like SUVs in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's so ridiculous. It's like the X6 is the car for the person who goes like, I don't know what makes a car cool, but I think that this car has it because it's a coupe. It's an SUV. It's fast. Mm-hmm. It's like it can still hold like 5 people. It's got like a swooping line. Like it's not quite a hatchback. It's not quite has a trunk. It's literally the middle ground of like every car. It's like it's not even that luxury,
mm-hmm,
but it's not that Spartan. And it's like it's literally the center point of all cars is the X6. And it's because it is so everything, it's nothing. And I despise those.
I'm not a big fan of the X6 either. Yeah.
I do have to say, what is it? The X1 is the one or the X2 that recently came out? I can't ever keep track of because if it's 2, it's a coupe, so it has to be the 1, right? Or do I have
No, they went away from that. That's not how they do it anymore.
Okay. So stop at BMW. But the smallest SUV BMW makes right now, I actually really like. Every time I see it, I'm like, I like that, except for it has the badge on the C pillar and it drives me nuts.
Oh yeah. I know which one you're talking about. I think that size of vehicle is inherently worthless.
Correct.
And I don't care which brand it is, how fast it is. It doesn't, the GLA or GLB or whatever they call it, the Toyota CHR, the Honda HRV, the Chevy Trax, that like micro SUV thing, completely worthless. Mm-hmm. I'd really like a car that doesn't really have enough room for 4 people, 4 adults anyway.
Right.
But then also is not very fast because, you know, SUV, not a sports car.
Right.
That I can't put very much stuff in the back because I want to be able to park it because it's small. But then also I get really bad gas mileage in return because I have this useless box shape thing.
Yes.
And they're selling bajillions of them. Literally, that's all Buick sells is the Encore.
Yes.
That's literally all they sell. They sell the Encore now. You can go in and you can delude yourself looking at a lacrosse or whatever, mm-hmm. or you can be Bradley Brownell and buy the wagon one that they have no interest in selling because you don't see ads for them ever.
They don't sell them anymore. They stop making the wagon.
They stop making them altogether. Oh, well, yeah. that's even worse. I know. Like, there you go. Like, that was a perfectly, that's the best car they made by Correct. Far. They spent $0. $0 advertising it, the same way Chevy spent $0 on the SS, and that right. was by far and away the best car they made.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%, and it drives me nuts because it's like, oh, no one's buying this. Did you tell anyone you were selling it? No. Well,
no, I guess not.
Well, the enthusiasts should buy it. But you need to reach more people than just the enthusiasts. So.
And then Lexus the other day talked about they're not going to do the hot version of the LC500. Oh, well, nobody's buying the LC500, so we're not going to spend the money. Like, no, that's not how it works. You have to have the cool one that's limited right. edition to hook everybody. And then they go, oh, well, damn, I can't get the cool one, so I may as well get the regular. Like, they've done it backwards. Like,
yeah.
there's this huge issue with, I think, and they must know what they're doing because they make money or whatever. But Toyota's yeah. ads are lame, and I think they can afford to be because they sell a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
The only good car ad I've seen recently was Acura. I'm not interested in any of their products.
Right, which is a shame. I know this isn't in our prepared crap, but
that's okay.
This is.
I think we're on a good line here, so it's all right.
It drives me nuts how good of a company Acura is.
Yes,
they make nothing that I want to buy. Like, how is it? Like, the only exception is the NSX, obviously. But
I don't even want to buy that.
I don't. I would. If I had to buy a cheap supercar that was new, that would be what I would get. Like,
cause, I would get a C8. Especially yeah. now. So in a pre-C8 world,
yeah, uh-huh.
I kind of get it. I understand that. You can spend half as much money and get a C8 now.
I know.
Why would I even bother?
Gas mileage, that's all I can come up with. But like, so I'm saying, but like the only car that Acura makes that's even close to something I would want to buy, NSX. They make a series of SUVs and then a couple of sedans, and they make nothing that like inspires, but like the heritage of that company and like what that company does with its advertising is always great. But I'm always like, you have nothing that I want to buy. And I don't get why they can't just come out, because Honda makes some good stuff. Why is there not that like transition over? And I like, is there like someone has a stick in their ass at Acura? I don't understand it.
They spend so much money on racing. Like Acura yes. and Honda are one of like the most invested groups in racing, as far as they have an endurance program. And not only an endurance program, they had a really high profile one with Penske.
Yeah.
The IndyCar Penske ran yeah. their endurance program. That was really good. They just recently dropped Penske from doing that, but they spend a lot of money on that. They spend a lot of money in IndyCar every year with basically the same motor.
Yeah.
They spend money. They do Baja and stuff and a Ridgeline. They build Ridgelines to go do off-road racing. Like, if they're spending that much money doing that kind of stuff, they're putting motors in Formula Fords. Like, if you want to buy a Formula Ford now, the Ford yeah. motors are really hard to do. Honda built. They're like, yep, this is an engine that fits right inside a Formula Ford that gives you basically the same everything.
Yeah.
And we're just going to make them for you.
They That's do awesome.
Good stuff yeah. for, you know, the stuff. And the Civic Type R is a pretty good car. They've got people doing global rallycross. They've got touring cars that are Civics. The Civic Si, really good car.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to Acura, you get the, what are they called? The A spec or the B spec or whatever. Like the MDX, the new MDX looks yeah. really good. If you've seen the ad, the new MDX yeah. is a good looking car. It's not fast.
No.
It gets its doors blown off by anything in the same segment with the same price, roughly, mm-hmm. is way faster.
Right.
And speed isn't everything, blah, 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 but it's an awful lot.
Right.
Especially when you've got a big SUV and you're trying to, like, the reality is people are buying big SUVs with large motors because they want to get on the freeway quickly.
Correct.
They want to have five people in the car and they want to put their foot down and still do 0-60 in 6 seconds.
Right.
That's why people are buying them, and they're not giving that. So I don't know what the disconnect is on why they're not doing this. They spent money on that. They spent money on that MDX, tons.
Yes.
And they've spent a bunch of money advertising it, and it's just not good.
And I see none on the road anymore. And that's the thing. Like, you talk about heritage. When Acura came to the U.S., they were the first luxury Japanese brand. You know, they beat Lexus. They beat everyone else. They were the ones who tested the waters. And they did it right. Like you said, they brought out the NSX first. They gave us a bunch of, like, cool little hot cars. Mm-hmm. And then they had the other cars that kind of, like, filled in the gap. Like, well, you can't afford, like, the top-of-the-line version of this, but you can get kind of close to that. And it was – they did a good job with that. And then I don't know what happened. I know that, like, Honda for a while tried to, like, button up their engines is the expression, I think, in the industry of, like,
well, they're still having issues with those, but
yeah,
their turbocharged stuff still not doing too hot.
Right. But it's like, how do you not, like, they were poised to overtake, like, the car enthusiast scene, like Honda and Acura, mm-hmm. when it came to, like, the Fast and Furious stuff. Like, look at the first Fast and Furious movie and look at the cars that were in there.
Yeah.
And, like, what was the main car that everyone was using? They were stealing stuff with Honda Civics.
Right.
Was there even a Honda in the last Fast and Furious movie? I don't think so.
Now, I think part of that has probably become – that's also a commentary on what Fast and Furious movies have become in terms of
– True.
Now it's about product placement and not necessarily genuine to the car community.
Right.
At large. So, like, I think that's probably part of it too, but one does see your point. Absolutely. I have a Toyota MR2, and you know what I venture to put in as an engine? What's a K24. That?
Yeah.
I want to put a Honda engine in it because they make really good engines. Right. No question about it.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know what it is, but it just, again, I love the Civic Type R. I absolutely, as outlandish and crazy and stupid looking as it is, it's everything. Like, it's a tuner car for an adult in my mind, because it drives well, it handles well, it, you know, you don't get the torque steer in it, which is great from a front wheel drive car. But in that segment, how did you not make it all wheel drive? Like, that's right. The thing that, and it's not like it's a ton cheaper than its competition. Like, is it, it's more expensive than a Focus ST, which they don't make anymore, but when it came out, it's more expensive than a Focus ST and still as much as a Focus RS. How did you miss that market? Like, if you would have smacked in right in there, it would have been perfect. And, like, I just, like, that's the sort of stuff where I'm like, just, like, this close to just making it, like, a great car. It's still a good car, but that close to making it a great car. And I just don't get what's happened to Honda recently and Acura, and it's just like, stop it.
Yeah.
Like, just listen to people for like 5 seconds. Like, if you're going to build this car, just build it a little bit better. Cause they had right. The Global Rallycross car. That was an all wheel drive car. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously that was a shared platform with a bunch of work, but it's like, you have the Civic Type R, it's all wheel drive, it's out there racing. Throw just a little bit. It's not like they don't have all wheel drive systems.
Well, the wheelbase isn't, the HRV is all-wheel drive. That's almost the same wheelbase. And failing that, the CRV is all-wheel drive too. Put a shorter drive shaft in it. Like, I'm sure some engineer type will tell us that that's not how it works or whatever. But Toyota, basically, to make the all-wheel drive Camry, 100% said, oh, yeah, we just took the RAV4 drivetrain and threw it in there because it fits. Because everything's on a shared platform now.
Right.
How can it be that hard?
Mm-hmm. And to that point, I want to circle back to the small SUV thing. I am so tempted when the Fiesta ST, because I've never planned on getting rid of it, ever becomes the non-daily driver. Mm-hmm. I have the thought process of, they make the Ford EcoSport, which is lifted Fiesta.
Mm-hmm.
I am very tempted to just take that suspension and throw it on the Fiesta ST at instant rallycross car.
I think that'd be good.
Yeah. Some big old fog lights on top of that thing. I'm like, because I parked it next to an EcoSport in the grocery store parking lot the other day. And I was like, well, the Fiesta would look good with those wheels. This would be a little, like, no cladding and some mud flaps. That would be a good rallycross car. Mm-hmm. So, but it also brings me back to the point of, why would you ever buy an EcoSport?
Right.
Like, it is actually smaller on the inside, and the hatch is less usable because it comes out sideways, which no one can ever figure out. Like, if you ever want to just confuse someone, just ask them to open up the hatch of an EcoSport, because the stupid latch is hidden in the tail light, which, for God knows what reason. Like, and it looks like, because one side has the reverse lamp and the other side, it's a handle. Ford.
Yeah.
Why?
Looks really good with the tire, with the spare tire on the tailgate. I like that look.
Yeah.
I like that look a lot. It's too bad it doesn't have the chops to back it up.
Right. No, it's like an anemic. Can you get that with the three-cylinder motor, though? That would be hilarious.
So.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I would buy that with the one-liter three-cylinder motor. I would buy an EcoSport all day because that's
Gosh. What an awful vehicle. I just can't. My father rented one when he came to see us before I left California.
Yeah.
And he was like, how do people purchase this? And he's like, I don't fit. And like, he's a little bit taller than me. He's like, I don't fit in this, but it's an SUV. What's the point? Mm-hmm. Why does it exist? If I don't fit, I can't put anything in it. Right. He said it was atrociously uncomfortable, which I will agree with. If you don't get the top of the line Ford anything, the seats are trash.
Correct. 100%.
Complete trash.
Yes. That being said, the Fiesta, if you're a larger fellow and you get a Fiesta ST, the seats can be very uncomfortable just because they're the Recaros.
Yes. So,
like, you're just, if you are a man of width and height in a Fiesta, it is not a good combo.
Not a good car. So, I didn't even like the seats in the, I sat in a Focus RS. And for me, and like, I'm a big guy, but I'm not like huge.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, this is kind of like.
Yeah, it's. They're actually the exact same seats I discovered in the Focus.
Are they the same seats?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's, yeah.
Yeah. Which makes less sense in the Focus because the Fiesta, they barely fit in there. Mm-hmm. But it's like, these are the biggest seats we could get. And in the Focus, it's like, we just grab the Recaros from the Fiesta. It'll be fine.
Then it'll be fine. I wonder if the Mustang Recaros are bigger.
I don't know. I have yet to be in a new Mustang, which is a little sad for me to admit.
The new Mustang is fun. I like the new Mustang.
So when I went to the dealership to buy the Fiesta, I almost bought an EcoBoost Mustang, but I had my wife there and she was already pissed at me because I had a Volvo V70R that I blew the head gaskets in twice. Mm-hmm. So it was not a good time to be like, well, why not a Mustang? Like, I'm already at my wit's end when it came to that.
Right.
But I just couldn't justify to myself, you know, one kid Mustang, fine. If we ever have, because we weren't sure at the time when we were going to have second kid, which we have yet to decide on. But like, if it comes up,
we're both running out of time on that.
Yeah, no, that's that thing. But like, second kid, like Mustang, no good. So like, that being said, I'm trying to convince the wife to get a BRZ, because we're coming up to the point where the Escape will probably need to be traded in.
Yes.
So I don't know. Does the seat fold flat in a BRZ? Passenger
seat? Yes, it does. 100%. Mm. If you fold it, there is a surprising amount of room. FRS, granted, mostly the same car.
Right.
When you fold that back seat down, you'll have to take the headrests out, I believe, to actually get it to work right with your angle. Mm. I had a lady buy one that she had a small Yorkie-style dog of that variety, size, shape. And it would just run around from the trunk to the back seat and back because the opening is kind of big. Like, if you don't have to have people in the back seat, there's a ton of space in an FRS or a BRZ.
Right. No, I'm talking specifically about the passenger seat because in a couple of coupes, I know the passenger seat can go like straight forward.
I don't think so.
That might be a deal breaker on that. But I don't know. We'll see. Because my plan is to slowly accumulate more cars just because that's how I operate.
Right.
So
same.
If I get the wife a nice beer, because it's one of the few cars she's ever looked at and gone, I really like that. Like, and it's been like four or five times where she sees a BRZ out on the road and she's like, I really like that. I'm like, and it's good too, because it's a good combination of she drives like a, if I got her a car with 700 horsepower, I would no longer have a wife. So I need to get her some, because she's not an aggressive driver most of the time, but there's a reason why when I slam on my brakes or I have to accelerate quickly, then my daughter will say a couple of cuss words. And it's not because of me, it's because she drives. Like, I remember I was driving, hit the accelerator, and I heard my daughter say, like, come on, stupid. I'm like, well, that's your mother speaking back there. So, there's that aspect. So BRZ, not a ton of horsepower, but enough to get out of its own way would be perfect. So I'm thinking, I don't know, I going in that direction with it, but I don't know. we'll see. The FRS is kind of where I would like to go towards, just because it's a little bit cheaper, but I don't know. So
I think for her, you're probably better off with the BRZ. You get the better HVAC system. There's more insulation, like the insulation in the trunk. There's more. There's like a couple weird things here and there that make the BRZ a little bit easier to live with.
Okay.
Which, if she's not taking it to the track, is probably what you want to lean towards. Yeah. You got to get the one, and there's only certain ones that have it, and you got to pick and choose. Like on the FRSs, you can get the special edition, and it has the screen in the gauge cluster.
Okay.
That actually gives you useful information. Mm-hmm. So if you have that one, usually you get the better stereo, you get the better suspension, and it's like the nicer one.
Yeah.
And the BRZ has the same type of thing too that you can get. So you got to find the one that has that.
Okay.
Otherwise, the interiors look really low rent. And it's like, not quite.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm a little nervous about its transmission too, because I think it's a Subaru transmission, so that kind of scares me.
It's a very sturdy transmission, though. I can't remember. It shares that transmission with something, and I don't remember what it is. I'm going to search that real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I have never had one come in with a transmission issue.
I'm talking about the automatic, though.
Yeah, no, yeah. Exactly. It's a stout transmission, I think, because it shifts really definitively. It's like firm as soon as you pull the paddle.
Yeah. Well, that's good. But, yeah.
They share that transmission with something else that, like, I want to say that whatever transmission it is like, way over-specced for the car. I thought I read that somewhere that it's like, you don't really – the thing you've got to worry about is the diff if you take it to the track.
Okay.
But nobody ever does that.
No.
A960E. It's the same transmission that's in the 06 Lexus GS, the up until 2013 Lexus IS, and then the Toyota Mark 10, which is like the
little bit
bigger than a Corolla but smaller than a Camry Japanese one. So it's a beefy transmission.
And it's a Toyota transmission.
It's a Toyota transmission.
Okay, so that makes me so much happy. We'll see how this works out. So because we'll probably try and get through the winter with it, but I don't know where we're going to go with it after. So my plan is, because right now I have Fiesta, Fiero, Ranger, Escape. So if I get her the BRZ, we need another family car, which means I get to get a 2-for-1 deal on that. And I'm leaning towards conversion van.
I like the conversion van generally.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, they're not tremendously efficient.
Yeah.
And I am the first person who's on board with like, hey, yeah, good. I have a van. It's got space, all that kind of stuff. But also, I just can't get on board with something that's that large that isn't really useful, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, you don't really need that much space for just the three of you.
Right. But it's one of those things where, A, it's a little bit of nostalgia because I grew up in conversion vans. Mm-hmm. And B, it's one of those things where you can go out and camp in a conversion van, which makes me happy because I'm not out in a tent sleeping on the ground like a crazy person. It makes my wife happy because we're camping. So that's kind of where I'm going with that.
Would you consider a Japanese import van?
I would all day consider a Japanese import van. So
they're not very expensive. And if you get the Toyota one, the parts are easily accessible.
Well, that's tempting. But can I get a TV in the back?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you can have one installed too. I think some of them had one, but you could probably have one installed. Can't be that. In today's day and age, adding a screen to something cannot be that expensive.
No, but can I play Gran Turismo on a TV in the back?
Strong potential that you could do that. You'd have to plug in a PlayStation. I do want to talk about something. Speaking of Gran Turismo,
yes.
And I will get to Gran Turismo here in a second. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about how at this juncture, I am fully willing to write not one, but two $500 checks to two tech companies, and I cannot find a way for them to take my money. There is both a graphics card I would like to purchase, and I would like to pre-order a PlayStation 5.
Yeah,
I cannot do either thing right now. They will not take my money. I'm like, build more, give me an order. If the delivery date is in December, that's fine. Take my money so I will have one. I want to have one up with my name on it. Cannot do it. You cannot find a PlayStation 5 pre-order. You cannot buy a 3080 graphics card right now. You cannot do it.
You are quite literally impossible. You are literally the Fry meme. Like, shut up and take my money.
Exactly. And me and thousands of other people too are like, I'm going to pay you. I want to pay you. Please give me your product.
Yes. But no, we don't want it now. You wait. You wait in line and we'll tell you when you can give us money.
That's ridiculous. This just makes me grumpy. Anyway, the PlayStation 5 came out. When the PlayStation 5 preview first came out,
right,
Gran Turismo 7, or what was presumed to be Gran Turismo 7,
right,
it ended up being so, was the first game showcased on the kind of video thing.
Yeah, like what PlayStation, look what's coming when this launches. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it was said shortly thereafter that Gran Turismo 7 would not be a launch title.
Right.
I'm a big Gran Turismo guy. That's really what got me into cars, was thrown in Gran Turismo 4. And it was the one that kind of had like the big map that you kind of scrolled around to get to whatever object it was you wanted to do or whatever. Mm-hmm. You had the used car dealerships. You'd get stuff from the 80s and the 90s, and you could mix and match stuff here. And the tuning was like semi-realistic in terms of you couldn't just give something a bajillion horsepower with NOS.
Yeah.
But you could.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. It was really good game. And at the time, one of the kind of the cutting edge as far as video games on the console, the graphics were pretty good and the physics were pretty good. Mm-hmm. You had real tracks. There weren't a bunch of made up, fake, weird, swoopy nonsense tracks. It was mostly real tracks on there. So Gran Turismo 7, it's not going to be a launch title. And then they sent out this really cryptic tweet the other day that was Gran Turismo 7 coming soon. And that was just the same ad they had played before. But now they're tweeting us saying it's coming soon. So the speculation is that it's going to launch kind of right around the launch window. So it should be available this winter,
right,
in theory.
Yeah. Maybe before Christmas, maybe hopefully. Not. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a big, I remember years ago, one of the Call of Duties came out, but they pushed it back, or it was a Halo, whichever one it was, and they pushed it back behind Christmas, and they were like, oh, it's going to kill the sales amount, because no one's going to want it, because they're going to want to wake up on Christmas morning and play this game, and it ended up being, like, no deal. Like, it was like, you know how both those games always were, where it was like, it's the biggest media event in, like, human history up till this point in terms of, like, raw numbers, and it was like, yeah, it doesn't matter. So I can imagine maybe Gran Turismo, they're like, we want to get it out before Christmas, but maybe not. Like, if it's a shitty game, like, but then, or we'll put it out and we'll just have a 200 gigabyte, like, download on day one, how those things always happen.
Right.
So, which is always fun. Like,
I still have some stress from the Gran Turismo 5 launching, which they delayed like 6 times.
Yeah.
Of like, it was going to be Christmas and then by the end of the year and then February and then March and then, okay, May. And then it ended up not coming until, like, September the following year or something. And it was worth it. Like, it was the first full game that was going to be on the PlayStation 3 in HD and stuff.
Right.
So it was worth the wait. But it was like, dang, it just keeps going. I'm real worried that's what Gran Turismo 7 is going to end up being as well. It's just this constant wait. Oh, just kidding. We delayed it again type of situation.
Is that the one, too, where it came out finally and then, like, 2 or 3 weeks later, the PlayStation Network went down for like 2 months.
Yes, yeah. It is that one. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That was when PlayStation realized, it really is a lot better if you have everybody paying monthly for server space, because then you can have more support.
Right. Yeah, I remember because I recently was living on my own when that happened. I went out and bought the Xbox 360 or whatever it was at the time. I had been playing it for years. And then the console generation skipped. I was like, ooh, the new Gran Turismo is coming out. I'm going to buy it. I went out and bought the PlayStation. I got the thing. And the day I got home is the day the network was down for like months. And I'm like, why did I even buy this?
Right.
So that was fun. But it's still a great game. Yeah. So, man, there's that. Is there anything more you want to say about Gran Turismo before?
I mean, not specifically. I do find, during this whole pandemic thing, I actually got into playing iRacing a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I always kind of was not a fan of because, one, only recently have I had a computer that would really run it reasonably well, which you can run it on a pretty old computer, but I always had computers that were worse than that. So
you had worse than my computer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was, I could fire up my PlayStation and play Gran Turismo in HD and smooth frame rate and all the other, or I can struggle through playing iRacing on a controller and like that sucks. And then the iRacing is, there's a yearly subscription.
Yep.
All of the content costs money.
Right.
All of that kind of stuff. So that was kind of a bummer, but I recently got into it. The subscriptions were half off. They might still be. And I just paid for the whole year and it was half off. It was like $100 or whatever. I'm like, well, there's worse things that I've spent $100 on in the past, you know, little while. And you know, one of the first things I did when I got laid off was, okay, well, I'm going to buy a steering wheel. I'm going to buy a seat. I'm going to need something to do because I know it's going to be mindless sitting here doing nothing.
Right.
And it's completely different. And I really, really enjoy it. And you get a satisfaction when you win. Typically on Gran Turismo, in order to win a race, even against the computers, you either have to have an overspec'd car because you can't qualify. You have to start from the back every time. So it becomes like a passing challenge every time. Or you have a car that's even with everybody else's and you will never win because you cannot make up the 45 seconds or whatever it is that you need to in the amount of time that the race takes. Or you go online where people have been playing online long enough that they know how to drift the car barely sort of kind of in the right angle to get around the corner. And it's like, that's not really how you would drive the car.
No.
iRacing avoids a lot of that.
Yeah.
You do get what you pay for with it. As far as the matchmaking is pretty good. You've got a nice tiered system. So you're not ending up with foolish people in a good lobby, stuff like that. So I've really enjoyed that. If you're on the fence about it, this is a really good time to get into sim racing because a lot of people bought into sim racing like I did because they were bored from the pandemic and you had to stay home and all that other stuff. Now nobody's using all of that crap and there's no relief in sight as far as stimulus or whatever. Apparently we're just going to keep putting that off.
Right.
People are going to need cash here pretty soon. So you've got all these people who invested hundreds and hundreds and sometimes thousands of dollars in a system that now that they're back to work, they're never going to touch.
Right.
So they were way behind on stock for a long time as far as wheels and stuff. They're way overstocked now because they've saturated the market.
Right.
It's a good time to pick up a used wheel, you know, make a light upgrade. They've got the new graphics cards are out now. Yeah. So all the 10 series and 20 series graphics cards used right now, incredible deal to buy one of those. So you can get yourself a modest PC upgrade. You can get iRacing. You can get the wheel. You can get the stand probably. You can bolt it to your desk if you have to and actually have a lot of fun if you've got the time to invest in it, obviously. But it really, it's more of a, I got to do it every day. I've got this series that I'm trying to do and I'm going to keep doing it. And you end up racing with the same people over and over again. Yeah. And it's really been fun. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, I know like the Lemons people, they do a iRacing series. And I know a bunch of different leagues are doing the series. And it's one of those things where since you can't get out and go be with people right now, this is, you know, video games have been a great escape for a lot of people. And I love that about them. And specifically when it comes to the sim racing stuff, if you're not a race enthusiast, I don't think you would be even know about iRacing, honestly, because it's such a niche thing.
It's like, super niche.
Right.
Especially when you look at the cost involved too. Nobody knows it exists.
Yeah. That there's gatekeeping, like keeping people out of stuff. And then there's this, which is like, it's not gatekeeping so much as it is like you have to find, if you can find this gate, if you know the gate exists, you're already in like the deep end anyway. So if you find yourself like headed that direction, I mean, honestly, like you said, it runs on a fairly decent computer, like we'll probably do a good job with it. I don't know how graphically intense it is.
The nice part about iRacing is you go to their website, there's minimum system standards. The minimum standard's pretty low, but I have an expectation of what I would like to have happen as far as if I'm going to be doing something online. I used to do Gran Turismo pretty competitively. My internet has to be good. I have to be getting 40 or 50 frames at least. And most people will tell you that's not enough. But if I can't get a steady 50 frames, it's not worth my time.
Right.
So you can run, if you can run it at low settings at 40 frames a second, it's 100% playable. You just have to deal with watching the graphics be kind of meh.
Because
at the end of the day, it's basically a NASCAR Thunder 2003 mod. They built it on the same platform because NASCAR Thunder 2003 was a fantastic game. Oh, wow. Really precisely detailed and stuff with graphics from 03. So they've just built on top of that over and over and over again to where now the physics are actually really, really good. And they've kind of did some graphical stuff on there as well that works really well. So you have the range available. You can have a mid-range PC from 6 or 7 years ago that runs okay. I have a 970 graphics card, and this is an i5 6600K processor, and I can run middle to high graphics right at about 60 frames. And if I want to go down in graphics, then I can go a lot higher.
Yeah. So that's what do you think? So in your opinion, someone's going to go out and buy hardware for it, like steering. Let's say they already have a computer. Let's give a little bit of consumer advice here. They already have a computer that they are willing to work on. What steering wheel or like pedals, like what do you think you need to kind of like be like, that's not necessarily competitive, but like enjoy what's going on. Like,
you know, I wouldn't go for the, there's a lot of wheels available on like Amazon, for example, that are Chinese wheels with springs on and stuff. I wouldn't go for something like that. You're really not going to get your money out of it. There's also some lower end, Thrustmaster makes some pretty cheap wheels that are like, your best bang for your buck. And the most popular wheel out there right now is the Logitech G29. Then if they make the G920, which is the Xbox One, you can buy the PlayStation One or the Xbox One. Both of them work on the PC. Okay. So it's just a matter of if you have an Xbox, you pick one. If you have a PlayStation, you pick the other one. If you only have a PC, pick the PlayStation One because it has like two more buttons.
Okay.
You can use to adjust settings in the car, basically. Mm-hmm. That's what I would get. And it's not going to be great. The pedals still kind of eh, but because they're popular, there's a lot of different spring options. So you can replace springs in the pedals. Okay. You can, the steering wheel is actually bolted on with like Allen bolts. So you, there's people that make on Etsy, they make different steering wheels to put on there. So
that's cute.
Your cost of entry is like $175 to $200, and you can find them used right now because people are getting rid of them. And people like me who are staying into it are, well, I might upgrade to a direct drive, which is, you know, several hundred dollar expensive situation, but people are selling those now too. So now I'm going to sell my G29.
Yeah. So
I'm going to have to take a little bit of a loss on it. So it's a good time right now to do that. Everybody's trying to upgrade because there's people who don't want to have that much money laying around something they're not using.
Right.
But yeah, the G29, great starting wheel, 100%. Would recommend it. They're going to get cheap now anyway because they just launched the new one that has, you know how PlayStation did the DualShock thing? They were really the first ones.
Right, yeah.
They put DualShock motors in the steering wheel. So if you hit the curbs, it sets off the DualShock motor. It goes, which I like don't really care about that much. But they're launching that one. It's supposed to be brand new. So that means the older one, the G29 is going to be the older one now, will be super cheap.
That's fascinating. So if does iRacing have like a little friends list thing going on?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So if someone's listening and they want to race against you, what did they send it to?
Well, so they would just have to message me and they would just find my name, Ryan West. That's the other cool thing about iRacing is like you just get to have your name.
Oh, that's nice.
Not many people, it's just that's your name and there you go. So if you find me, Ryan West, on iRacing, you want to race or whatever, let me know. Hit me up on there.
Well, that works. We've been going for a little bit, so I think we're a little over time with our little thing today. So
cheers. Good.
Yes. So let's call that one a evening. Let's do a little cheers. Ryan, again, where can people find you on the media social?
So Daily Driven Racer on Instagram. I haven't been posting very much there. It was a really good idea for a an article series that I currently can't do because of COVID, et cetera. Yep. But it's coming and it's going to be really cool when I do get around to it. I'll tell you that, you know, and it'll be a really hard sell for the PR people, but that's okay. So you find me there, Ryanator122, I believe, on Twitter as well. So you're good to go there. And then you can find me on currently the Facebook page that I'm currently peddling is the anti-BMW club, which is people who like BMWs but don't like BMW people. Who would like know about cars and are reasonable human beings, that it's basically screenshots of look at this dork in the BMW page trying to do the look at me in my fake Rolex and you can see my BMW logo picture thing. It's making fun of those people. And then you have people on there such as Tyler Hoover and Bill Caswell, are also on the anti-BMW BMW club. So occasionally if you post something good, one of them will reply to you. Bill Caswell actually replied to me. I asked on that page, hey, $3,000 BMW smash or pass, and I like showed the car. Mm-hmm. And everybody said smash, and then Bill Caswell actually posted something that was smash, but only if you can get the Jeep one. And then some render that he's had done where it's like an X5 that's been lifted with no doors, like on a sand dune. Yeah. So it was like, okay, cool. Like you get to rub elbows a little bit with people who are in the community, which is nice.
That is nice. Yeah. I always like that when you find yourself on like a weird random page or something and it's like, oh, this person is a celebrity. That's interesting. So, oh my goodness. So
Bill Caswell would tell you that he's not a celebrity. Fun fact. Having met Bill Caswell now, he's pretty cool. I like him.
That was good. I always like that too. That's always delightful. So this whole show is basically a series of don't meet your heroes and then finding out your heroes are quite delightful people.
Actually, pretty cool people. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So the show's stuff is all at Untitled Car Show.
Yes.
Twitter is the best place to get a hold of me because this is the only place I check regularly. I have a Facebook and all that stuff, or the show does. Check out the YouTubes for Untitled Car Show. Subscribe there so you can watch our beautiful faces and all my gesticulating that's going on here. And my wonderful background. What do you think, Ryan? We haven't talked about the background.
So that's a map of Southern Europe. And a Daytona 2000 kilometers poster. Mm-hmm. Is that from an old sponsor? ?
That is from an old sponsor.
Fantastic. So, good. How are they doing? Have you heard from them at all?
I have not. So because okay. That was.
Are they still in business? You should still buy things from them because they were really cool.
They. I think in the audio intro, I think I still mentioned them. So
perfect. Good.
I'm not sure. I do a good job editing stuff. Who was that at Right Foot Down who got that sponsorship? Who was that?
No idea.
Yeah, that's going to do. See, we're at the point in the program where if someone's listening at this point, they're like a true fan, so they should know all the behind baseball stuff. And mm-hmm. That's Steve Leto's book right there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's Chicago right there. Right, mm-hmm. See, you got your thing. Where
it's
are
the
you?
The Golden Gate Bridge. Yep, I have stood on this. You can kind of point to it, right? I have stood here before. It's a really cool view. I've also stood here, mm-hmm. and I've stood over here, and mm-hmm. I've ridden my bike across the bridge. It's fun.
I've been across that bridge too, twice, I think, at least. What is that, Golden Gate State Park, where you would be sitting right now, technically?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I'm assuming it's going the right direction. Yeah, we're looking north.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. You're looking north. Okay, so this is actually closer to the beach. I've been on both sides. Yeah. So the off in the distance over there is where the missile silos are or were.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So, but that is a great area if you ever find yourself out there. Not San Francisco proper, but across the bridge, there's a wonderful state park or national park, whatever it is.
Yes, and multiple, hundreds of them. Yes. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And then that's my like condolence to the audiophiles. It's one of these things.
Ah, I see.
So it's audio foam. So eventually we're going to do more of that down here, but the acoustics down here aren't that bad.
It sounds all right. I need to fix mine. I'm in my living room, which is not mm-hmm. acoustically perfect. Need to work on some of that.
But we're professionals. This is what we do. So we're going to work on yep. that. And then
if you're listening right now, this is still technically the soft launch, yeah. by the way.
this show has been 6 years of soft launch.
Soon we'll have a launch party. It'll be like, good news, we've started a podcast.
Yeah.
Well, don't listen to the old ones.
The podcast has a title now. We got it. Finally figured it out. Oh my goodness. So that was fun. So if you're listening right now, thanks so much. I hope you enjoyed a little bit of behind baseball going on here. And tell a friend. Because the goofiness never ends. So,
or send us a tweet or something.
Yeah, just interact with us. We're desperate for attention is basically attention. What it comes to.
I do nothing all day. If you tweet at me, I will have a Twitter argument with you 100%, especially if it's about cars. I do nothing at my job all day long. I suspect you do too, but hey.
You're not wrong. My goodness. Okay, so we're just going to end it here. All right. Bye, everyone. Good night, good evening, and all that bullcrap.
Have your pets spayed or neutered.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Bye.